Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from market analyst Chuck Penner. He provided a pea market outlook during CropSphere yesterday. As well, there's some concerning numbers in the new club route distribution map released Monday. We'll speak with Wayne Truman, who is the former chair of SAS Canola. And of course, some of those cases, in fact, at least one, was in the RM of Clayton, which is based in Hyas. APAS says Ottawa's new carbon tax proposal will be extremely costly to Saskatchewan farmers. We'll talk to Todd Lewis, the president of that organization. Meanwhile, Saskatchewan farmers are welcoming Ottawa's review of the Canada Grains Act. We'll hear from Western Canadian Wheat Growers Committee Chair Jim Wickett on that. Crop research in Saskatchewan is getting a big boost. You may have heard our announcement yesterday from Federal Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau and Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe. We'll hear from Saskatchewan Agriculture's Barb Ziesman, who is the research director, talking about the funds that will help improve crop yields and disease resistance. All that and more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, it looks like we have a couple of warnings for this region for this afternoon.
Yeah, the first is a freezing rain warning. Watching some precipitation coming in from the west over the early part of the afternoon. It's going to spread in. Now, temperatures are still sluggish. We're looking for high today of 3, and you're thinking coming out of the morning still well below freezing. How are we going to do that? And it's because of a warm front behind this precipitation. So it slides in. We're cold to the ground, but warm air is really blasting in aloft, and that's why we get that freezing rain potential. At the ground, we'll lag just about an hour or two behind the upper levels, so not an extended period of freezing rain, but the problem with freezing rain is it doesn't take much to make things slippery, especially on lesser traveled areas, sidewalks, steps that are maybe less used, or even that are used. You know, it can get pretty slippery pretty fast on those surfaces. Roads, not as big of an issue with a quick shot of freezing rain, especially ones that are well-traveled. Temperatures, though, behind this front, jump quickly. We're going to be climbing up above freezing. We're up to around 3 this afternoon. Still think we're going to get there. The wind, not too bad this afternoon. It's averaging around 20 kilometers per hour from the south, southeast, more of a south-southwest as the front goes by. Then that warning expires. The freezing rain warning expires once we get above freezing. The next warning is a wind warning, and that goes into effect tonight. The strongest winds look like they're going to be coming in right around sunrise, maybe just after sunrise, from somewhere between 6 and 9 a.m. is when the strongest winds, and we could be seeing gusts during that period, during the early morning hours, upwards of 85 to 90 kilometers per hour. So we're talking some pretty serious wind. The rain will be on and off. It likely is more off through the night, and then it sets back up as some snow as you drop off to minus 4. Yeah, you could factor in a wind chill, but it's just going to be very, very blasting of the wind, and I think it's the strength of the wind that's going to be more of a concern than the wind chill. Minus teens mathematically, but yeah, it's going to be cold. What it also means is the snow is going to be blowing around. The snow is not that heavy. We're looking for up to about 5 centimeters late tonight through the morning hours tomorrow. But blowing. It's going to blow around a lot more than sticking. Temperature gets down to minus 4 by morning. The wind is in the north-northwest. It'll be continued strong through the day. Even if we don't get those 85-90 gusts, we're still going to see gusts 75 to 80 through the afternoon. Temperature mostly steady, might wobble a bit, but overall it's steady near minus 4 and then very, very gradually dropping off. More of a sharp drop off Thursday night. The wind will come down. Not entirely. We're still 25 to 40, but that's a lighter wind than the daytime. A couple of flurries around. Still the blowing and drifting snow. That'll continue in the gusty wind, minus 13. The wind is much lighter on Friday. Back to a calm day. And actually, likely our coldest day at minus 7, because we're back up to minus 3 or minus 4 for the weekend with varying amounts of cloud and sun.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour: the Paw, Swan River, Dauphin, Brandon, Shoal Lake Russell, and Roblin all reporting in at minus 5 degrees. Regina, Saskatoon, and Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington are at plus 2. Hudson Bay, minus 2. Broadview, Mooseman, minus 1. Indian Head, plus 5. Make that plus 1. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a south wind at 17 kilometers an hour. 92% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 6 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 12 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 2 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 13 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 12 degrees. The normal low is minus 24 degrees. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:49 this morning, and it will set at 5:08 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was McCreary at plus 8 degrees. The cold spot was Clear Lake at minus 16. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Maple Creek at plus 10 degrees. The cold spot, Prince Albert, at minus 16 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. GX on Agriculture will return right after this. We're back on GX on Agriculture. It's now 12:24. And China is buying 95% of its yellow pea requirements from Canada, but is actively looking to diversify its purchasing base. Chuck Penner provided the pea market outlook during the online CropSphere event yesterday. He says there was a massive increase in exports at harvest.
There's always a spike in September, but this year's movement was exceptionally large. Because China is our major buyer now, I had expected more steady, even movement throughout the year, but that turned out to not be the case. Now we've moved back in November, and partly that's because China did stock up so heavily in September and October, and they're able to back off a little bit. In December already, we know from the CGC data that volumes are up a little bit again. And so expecting a fairly steady volume for the rest of the year.
Penner says China may be looking around for additional sources of yellow peas next fall.
As we've heard and seen in a number of other crops, China is looking to diversify its sources. Just like Canada doesn't want to be dependent on a single destination, in this case China, China doesn't want to be dependent on a single origin. So they are looking for other opportunities. So there are reports Ukrainian peas may be able to move into China in the future, as phytosanitary barriers start to come down. That's not going to affect this year's market because Ukraine has essentially run out of peas already, but it could be a factor for the 2021-22 season.
India will continue to be a non-factor for Canadian peas after being a major buyer several years ago.
Because they have, it's not just import tariffs, but quantitative restrictions. They do allow a small volume of green peas and a small volume of dun peas. That's largely from Australia. But for the most part, they've shut out yellow pea imports. And I don't expect to see that changing. In case anybody asks that question, I don't expect to see Indian pea imports improve in the short to medium term. And there's a couple of reasons for that.
Penner says conditions for the rabi are looking good following adequate amounts of rain. In addition, Indian farmers have seeded above average areas of both peas and chickpeas. Heading into spring, Canadian yellow pea stocks are fairly tight.
When we look at the ending stocks for this year, the yellow pea crop was only up 4%, while the green pea crop was up larger, was up even considerably more, 30%. And so I'm expecting the tightness to continue to show up in the yellow side of the market, while greens are going to struggle. Not that the supplies are burdensome or that type of thing, but certainly yellow is going to be the favorable, more favorable in the second half of this marketing year.
Penner expects overall pea area to remain stable. However, he forecasts a 7% increase for yellows and a 19% decline for greens.
We're looking at roughly steady pea acres, but that's kind of masks the differences for the two types. So I think as we see new crop yellow pea bids firm up now well above $8 in a lot of cases, that's enough to drive up some acres for yellows. But if greens are showing only a small premium or even a discount, that's going to mean that green pea acres are going to drop down. My experience tells me that you need roughly a $2 a bushel premium to get more green pea acres at the expense of yellows. And we're certainly less than that, much less than that these days, and could get even further. So more of a drop in green pea acres.
Penner provides his pea summary for both the current and new crop years.
We'll have tight supplies for the rest of this year, tighter for yellows than greens. But prices are also being supported by the feed and the meal markets, not just domestically, but in export markets. So I think there's more upside possible, and particularly for yellows. Greens, I'm not holding out as much hope. For next year, with a modest increase in acres and an average yield, supplies are going to be flat. Chinese demand should remain strong, but there's always a bit of a nervousness, at least I have a bit of nervousness, when you rely so heavily on one country. The other thing to note for next year is that other exporters will raise acreage, and probably places like Ukraine and Russia, especially if they get access to the Chinese market. There right now, they are also seeing very, very strong bids in Ukraine and in Russia, old crop bids, and that should encourage that. And I don't think they have the rotational constraints in terms of plant diseases and those kind of things that would tend to limit acreage in Canada.
Chuck Penner is with Left Field Commodity Research. He provided the pea market outlook yesterday at CropSphere. It's now 12:29 on GX on Agriculture. It's time to check the beef and forage report, and that's a presentation of McDougall Auctioneering.
Beef and forage report.
The Nature Conservancy of Canada has acquired three new pieces of land in Saskatchewan in the past year that will now be protected forever. NCC Saskatchewan spokesperson Cameron Wood says all of their properties together equal about 200,000 hectares. The goal is protecting grasslands and the wildlife that live within it. Wood says there is less than 20% of grasslands left in Saskatchewan, and he expects it's more like 14%. And that's today's Beef and Forage Report. It's now 12:31 on GX on Agriculture. That means it's time for the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX 94, AgriView.
U.S. corn, soybean, and wheat futures surged to fresh multi-year highs yesterday after the U.S. Department of Agriculture said 2020 U.S. corn and soy harvests were smaller than expected and stocks of key crops were thinner than previously thought. Corn jumped by as much as 5%, while soybeans added nearly 4%, and wheat gained almost 5%. The surge took prices to highs not seen since 2014. In its eagerly awaited series of January reports, the USDA pegged the 2020 U.S. corn harvest at 14.182 billion bushels based on an average yield of 172 bushels per acre, and soybean production at 4.135 billion bushels on a yield of 50.2. All were below average trade expectations, particularly corn. The USDA also forecast end-of-season corn and wheat supplies below trade estimates and confirmed investor fears of the tightest U.S. soybean stocks in 7 years. Argentina has lifted a suspension on corn exports announced in December and will opt instead for a temporary 30,000 metric ton daily cap on sales abroad, backing off the more restrictive measure that had infuriated farmers in the South American grains powerhouse. The world's number three supplier of corn announced on December 30th a two-month halt in corn exports in a bid to control domestic food prices amid a long recession and the COVID-19 pandemic. The Agriculture Ministry said in a statement in the early hours of yesterday that it had struck agreements to guarantee the domestic supply of corn and cushion local prices against fluctuations in international markets, allowing it to end the full ban. The cattle and poultry industry in Argentina uses corn to fatten chickens and cattle. The government had initially hoped that by keeping more corn in the country, the cost of feeding livestock would fall, increasing domestic food supplies. But farmers railed against the suspension last week and launched a strike, saying the full ban put downward pressure on production and forced them to temper investments. Argentina's soy, corn, wheat, and sunflower seed associations said such intervention in export markets eroded confidence and would lead to an immediate withdrawal of investments. The Indian government and representatives of protesting farmers failed to reach an agreement on contentious new agriculture laws on Friday and said they will meet again in a week's time. Tens of thousands of farmers have been camped on the outskirts of the capital, New Delhi, for over a month, calling for the repeal of laws introduced by the federal government, which says the legislation is aimed at modernizing the country's antiquated agricultural sector. Farm leaders say the laws are an attempt to erode a long-standing minimum support price for their produce and want a full repeal of the laws. The two sides will meet again this Friday. The protesters say they will proceed with a rally during India's Republic Day celebration on January 26th if their demands have still not been met. The majority of India's farmers sell their produce largely to small retailers at a much lower price than the government-guaranteed price offered to only a fraction of farmers. They fear that with the introduction of the new laws, big retailers such as Reliance Industries will enter the market to buy their produce at a lower price, while the government may slowly dismantle the current system of procurement at the guaranteed price. Earlier this week, Reliance asked authorities to help stop attacks on its telecommunication masts by protesting farmers who say the conglomerate has profited from the reforms at their expense. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. It's now 12:36 on GX on Agriculture. Please stay tuned. We'll return in 30 seconds time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's cloudy and minus 6 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. APAS says Ottawa's new carbon tax proposal will be extremely costly to Saskatchewan farmers. The $30 metric ton carbon tax is set to go to $170 by 2030. APAS President Todd Lewis says updated estimates place the cost to wheat farmers at $12.50 an acre or over $200 million.
Well, we've just extrapolated the numbers out from the $50 a ton numbers that we were using earlier. Those numbers we're fairly comfortable with. The Parliamentary Budget Office kind of confirmed those numbers late last fall. And so just extrapolating those numbers out, and that's far from an exhaustive list. It's taking into account things like electricity, added cost to our electrical, certainly natural gas and propane used for heating of barns and grain drying, an example. And kind of a real hidden cost is the extra transportation costs, especially in transporting grain by rail. So it works out to, you know, by the end of 2030, we could be as high as $12.50 an acre for a wheat crop on an average Saskatchewan farm. So very significant dollars, and it'll add up to, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on each individual farm, and really hundreds of millions at the farm gate, you know, coming straight off the bottom line of Saskatchewan producers.
Do you have any idea how many hundreds of millions?
I don't have anything right in front of me, but, you know, it's pretty easy. If you take 12-15 acre of wheat and times it by our times it, you know, across all the acres in Saskatchewan, you know, it'll be very similar numbers for canola, lentils as well. So, you know, it'll add up, and I say it's far from an exhaustive list. So if, you know, at $10 an acre times, you know, even 20 million acres of cropping in Saskatchewan, that's 200 million. So it's very significant numbers.
Will the federal rebates help very much?
Well, you know, that's more of a, on an individual basis. And, you know, even that is far, it's, they are more than what the urban people in Saskatchewan receive. But at the same time, if you look at the average farm family in Saskatchewan that's transporting children, you know, to school, sporting events and so on, you know, and just general living in rural Saskatchewan, the amount of fuel burned in a month is, in a lot of situations for Saskatchewan farm families, is equivalent to what a family in Saskatoon or Regina may burn in an entire year. And so we're certainly not at, you know, 12 times what our urban counterparts are getting for a rebate. And what it's going to do is really, how sustainable are we going to have for an agricultural industry, as well as even being able to live in rural Saskatchewan and be able to raise a family and prosper. It's a huge land mass that, you know, we've spread out. We're over 40% of the agricultural land in the country. And, you know, it's something that we need to have people living on the land to be able to farm and ranch properly. And this is going to be an added cost to Saskatchewan farm families.
And you're suggesting farmers need to be compensated for the efforts they make to reduce greenhouse gases.
Well, you know, Saskatchewan really has been the world leader in a lot of this new technology. You know, even looking at, you know, things like zero-till, even some of the new technology of driverless tractors and so on, the DOT system, you know, that's right here in Saskatchewan, that's been developed. And you know, so these, we've been producing more and more pounds of meat and more bushels of grain with an ever-lowering carbon footprint. So, and sequestration of carbon into our cropland and ranch land is very significant, and none of it's being recognized right now. So it's another piece of this puzzle that we certainly need to see recognition for what we have sequestered and what we continue to sequester on an ongoing basis.
With 40 million cropping acres, the total cost of the $170 per metric ton carbon tax could cost Saskatchewan farmers $500 million. It's now 12:41 on GX on Agriculture.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 112.20. That's down 27. April live cattle trading at 117.47, down 17. March feeder cattle trading at 133.92, down 5. April feeder cattle trading at 136.30, up 5. February lean hogs trading at 67.20, down 130. April lean hogs trading at 73.10, down 42. And that's the livestock market conditions. Well, there were some concerning numbers in the new club root distribution map released Monday. Visible club root symptoms were found in 24 Saskatchewan fields last year, bringing the total to 75 since 2017. The largest number of club root cases are in the northwest and north central regions of the province, but some have been confirmed in the RM of Clayton, based in Hyas. In addition, the number of fields with the club root pathogen detected but no visible plant symptoms increased by 18 in 2020. These cases were spread over several RMs, including the RM of Keys, based in Kenora, the RM of Sliding Hills, based in Mikado, and the RM of Cody, based in Kamsack. Wayne Truman is the former chair of Saskanola.
The visible symptoms have increased. We have now 75 visible symptoms in 25 RMs. previously we only had 5 soil-only positives in 5 RMs, and now we have 23 soil-only in 19 RMs. So that means that the spore load is increasing. It hasn't got to the point yet where it's affecting the plants, but that's the next step. So as farmers, we need to get smart about this, and we need to get smart real quick, because this isn't something we can fool around with. Once you have club root, it changes the way you need to farm.
It looks like northwestern Saskatchewan has some serious issues with club root.
Like I said, it's moving out from Alberta, and it's moving east from Alberta, and it's going into the areas that it established the easiest, I guess, in the the forest fringe and the lower pH soil areas. So it's a soil-borne disease, and we need to prevent the spread of club root in the soil. That's plain and simple.
Should producers be doing more testing of their soils?
Absolutely. That's why for the past 3 years, SAS Canola has partnered with the ministry to provide soil kits so that farmers can take a soil test, see what's in your soil, what's a healthier soil. What are the spore load levels like? And when you know what they are, then you have a chance to do something about it. If you've got a health disease personally, you don't wait until it gets out of control before you do anything. You do something when you get the first symptom. So in this case, with your soil health, same thing. When you know you got a problem, then you start dealing with it. But prior to that, use some good common sense rotations and all the health aspects for the soil that you should be using.
Do you get the sense that the message is starting to get through?
We've been talking about this for quite a few years, it seems like, but I guess we need to be concerned, because canola is the profitable crop. As farmers, we don't want to lose that out of our rotation. It's the profit crop, so, and especially this year when you see a higher price than normal. You don't want to throw all the good practices out the window just to take advantage of 1 year, because you want to be able to grow canola in your rotation every year. So please, please be smart about it and do the things that need to be done to take care of your soil.
Are you concerned that with the high price of canola, producers may tighten their crop rotations this year?
It's obviously a concern, without a doubt, but once you have the club root spores in your soil in high numbers, it takes many, many years to eliminate them or to get rid of them or to get them under control. So is it really worth the risk for 1 year? I guess that's what farmers are going to have to ask themselves. As farmers, we're in the game for the long haul. We're not in it just for 1 year. So it's very important to be smart.
Will the soil testing program be continued again this year?
We haven't made the decision as of yet. We've done it now, I believe it's 3 consecutive years in a row, and I'm sure it'll be coming to the board table here this spring. I'm sure it'll be talked about, and I'm sure it'll be a high priority list that goes to the board table here this spring.
What's the best way to stop the spread of club root?
The one thing that the preventative measures, using club root resistant varieties. But I want to point out that, you know, that we can't rely on science to keep bailing us out as well. Science has come up with a club root resistant variety. That's the first generation of club root resistance. And if we blow through that first generation resistance, then we're down to the second generation. And there hasn't been a lot of those varieties developed as yet. And so control the canola volunteers. Control club root susceptible weeds, flix weed, stinkweed, mustard, you know, the volunteer canola, as I mentioned. So there's some things that we can be doing as farmers individually ourselves. And it's a soil-borne disease, so it's going to travel, you know, in wind, water, however soil travels, it will travel. When you're going into your field with your equipment, do a rough clean of the equipment, knock off as many clumps of soil as you can. If you do, and when people do find some club root spores that have developed in their soil, it's not the end of the world. You know, there's chances that you can grow a grass area in those areas where there's visible symptoms. There's professionals out there that will help you. There's plant health officers that will help you deal with it once you've got it. It's not a death sentence, not the end of the world, but for gosh sakes, it sure makes a lot more sense to do something about it beforehand and be smart about it beforehand. Wait until the problem arises.
So are you more concerned about clubroot now than you were a year ago?
Absolutely. The numbers have increased. The number of fields, the number of visible fields have increased, and the number of fields that are now the spore loads are detected in RMs and fields have increased. So we've got more work to do, obviously.
And we shouldn't be satisfied that we have less cases than Alberta.
We can learn from the pain that they've been through, but we can't take our foot off the gas. We need to be smart about this.
Wayne Truman is the former chair of SAS Canola. It's now 12:49 on GX and Agriculture, and we'll have your commodities update coming up next.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading mixed in the nearby months this hour. March canola trading at $6.86.30, that's down 60 cents. May canola trading at $6.69.60, up 60 cents. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.28.5, up 7.75 cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $6.28.25, up 5.75 cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $6.63.25, down 1.75 cents. March corn trading at $5.26.75, up 9.5 cents. March soybeans trading at $14.13.5, down 4.75 cents. March oats trading at $3.61.25, down 0.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. Saskatchewan farmers welcome Ottawa's review of the Canada Grain Act. Federal Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau says the consultations will be online until April 30th. She says the act hasn't been changed in almost 50 years, and grain marketing has changed over the years. Western Canadian Wheat Growers Committee Chair Jim Wickett says the review is important.
This is long, long overdue. This died on the order paper. A lot of these changes in 2014 when the election got called, and we're very happy to see it restarted. We were a little disappointed to see it put on pause. We were ready to go then, but we're certainly ready to take this on now.
What changes would you like to see?
Well, there's certainly some changes that need crops need to be added so that they're covered under the bond issue if a company defaults, and that's canary seed. So that's certainly one that needs to be done. One of the other ones is we really need a review of what's actually needed with some of the services from the Canadian Grain Commission, and maybe, you know, in a perfect world, we would be able to look at the grading system. We have a visual grading system that's been in use since the beginning of time, it seems like, around the turn of the century. And technology's changed just a touch since then. And it's time to add the technology component in there. There's other countries doing it. The world, the grain trades on a spec grade. And Canada, the farmers still go with a visual grade, which is not to our benefit.
What's a spec grade?
Well, that just goes on by sprout folding number or any number of parameters that the end user, you know, if it's a flour mill in Indonesia, it might have a different spec and that works better in their heat and humidity to make bread and those kind of things. So we use a visual. I mean, take frost, for instance. You have frost. The millers call that Miller's Gold because it makes the brand pop off, so they buy it at a discount because visually the frost is there and it does nothing to the baking qualities, so they get their bread grain on a 20% off sale, and that's not helping farmers. That's taking money right out of the economy.
What do you want from a review of services at the Grain Commission?
Yeah, there's mandatory if grain leaves at either one of the coasts to a country other than the United States that the grain is inspected by the Canadian Grain Commission, who uses a visual grade spec. The grain companies are selling it on a spec-based, which is more technical. The Grain Commission doesn't do that, yet they get charged. They've dropped the charges, but that's where the surplus came on. They've dropped the charge, I think, to $1.31. But that's literally, in talking to one of the big mills from Winnipeg, who, well, I guess he's a buyer in Winnipeg for one of the mills in United Kingdom. They basically take that Canadian Grain Commission inspection, put it in the filing cabinet, never look at it again. It means nothing to them. So we're asking that the Grain Commission, it become an optional if it's inspected by them. There's plenty of other companies out there that can be accredited by them to do the inspections that are actually doing them now, because the grain companies or the end buyer is specifically asking for them, because it's in many cases inspected as it leaves the coast, and then it's re-inspected by the same company once it arrives at the destination. So it's a double inspection, and when you throw the Grain Commission one, it's done three times, and that that money that pays for that, that comes out of the bottom line of the farmer. That's, you know, that's in your basis. That's the cost of doing business to those companies.
So those are the key areas that you want to see changed?
Yeah, I think we need a... This act has been not really touched since for a long, long time. There's also some issues that never got dealt with the end of the wheat board, and that's reporting of vessel cargoes and destinations so that we know exactly what's leaving this country. Like, we have grain, especially this year, flying out of the country, and no one's 100% sure what it actually is going on. And, you know, we could end up here come the 1st of July and our local bakers might be out of bread, wheat that can make flour. So we just, you know, that should be a national interest to know exactly what's leaving the country. And virtually every other country in the world has that kind of reporting.
Jim Wickett is the Wheat Growers Committee Chair for review of the Canada Grain Act. It's now 12:56 on GX on Agriculture, and we'll return in 30 seconds' time.
Best.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. And as you heard yesterday on the program, crop research in Saskatchewan is getting a big boost. Saskatchewan and the federal government are contributing $9.8 million for 39 crop-related research projects. The Agriculture Ministry's research director, Barb Ziesman, says the funds will help improve crop yields and disease resistance.
So ADF, the research benefits producers, and producers benefit from the new knowledge and discoveries into disease resistance, understanding herbicide resistance, increased yields, and new varieties. And really what ADF is doing is it's helping make Saskatchewan producers more profitable and more productive while increasing the competitiveness of our industry. And this innovation will also help producers meet the Saskatchewan Growth Plan targets. And these include increasing crop production to 45 million tons, increasing agriculture exports to 20 billion, and increasing value-added revenue to 10 billion.
So how does this compare with last year?
So it's really similar level of funding from to what we funded last year in the crop. So last year in 2020, we announced $11 million for 47 projects. So it is similar. And the one thing that we will notice is that with ADF, our funding needs will differ from year to year. So they'll differ based on the projects, but also the needs of the producers as well.
Just how important does the government see crop research in Saskatchewan?
It's definitely important. So it helps us drive innovation. So we talked about new varieties, but it also helps us address the knowledge gaps or the constraints that producers are facing. And so it's really important to help us continue to grow, continue to be profitable, and continue to make Saskatchewan industry as competitive as it is.
Can you outline some of the projects for us?
Yeah, so a few of the projects that are funded this year. So we have one project that's using agriculture crop residues to develop bioabsorbents to remove arsenic from wastewater streams in the mining industry. Another project will gather soil fertility data from cropping lands using near-infrared mapping technologies that are already available with the goal of predicting crop yield. And another third project that's really interesting is one that aims to develop a simple, inexpensive, portable, and sensitive test strip for the detection of mycotoxins at the on-farm level or at the elevator level.
So these government funds also trigger other organizations to commit some funds as well.
Exactly, yeah. So through the ADF process, we work with a number of industry partners. There are industry co-funders. So we've worked with 9 different industry co-funders on the crop side. And there, through this, we've seen a contribution of $3.1 million for 22 different crop projects. So it really does show a great alignment with the industry needs and also a good opportunity to leverage funds to fund a variety of research projects.
That's Barb Ziesman. She's the research director with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture. It's now 1 o'clock on GX on Agriculture, and it's time to check the GX 94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions. A freezing rain warning and a wind warning is in effect. For today, cloudy with a 60% chance of spotty afternoon showers with freezing rain at first. Winds south-southwest at 15 to 25 and a high of plus 3. For tonight, a 60% chance of snow. Winds north-northwest at 40, gusting to 60 and even higher at times, a low of minus 4. For tomorrow, periods of light snow with 5 centimeters possible. Winds northwest at 45 to 65, gusting up to 80. The temperature steady near minus 4. For Friday, partly sunny, winds west-southwest at 10 to 20, and a high of minus 7. Saturday, cloudy, a high of minus 3. And Sunday, partly sunny, a high of minus 4. In the Paw, Swan River, Dauphin, Brandon, Show Lake Russell, and Roblin, they're reporting it at minus 5 degrees. Regina, Saskatoon, and Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, plus 2. Hudson Bay is at minus 2, Broadview, Mooseman, minus 1, Indian Head, plus 1. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a south wind at 17 kilometers an hour. 92% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 6 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 12 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX 94.